Before leaving the Nari area, Atisha composed his most important and influential work. This was the Bodhipatha Pradipa, or Lamp for the Path to Enlightenment. He also composed his own commentary on that work. The Bodhipatha Pradipa consists, that is to say, the original text on which he commented, consists of 68 verses, divided into two parts. The first part deals with the Mahayana, and the second with the Mantrayana or Vajrayana. The first part is very much longer than the second. That is to say, the Mahayana part is very much longer than the Vajrayana or Mantrayana part. And this is a very interesting fact, because it suggests that Atisha was concerned not to emphasize the Vajrayana. You must remember that at that time, Tibet was overrun by freelance tantric teachers from India, some of whom had given the Tantra a very bad name indeed. So Atisha was concerned to emphasize ethical and spiritual values. He was concerned to emphasize the Mahayana, the Bodhisattva ideal, the development of the Bodhicitta, the practice of the Paramitas, and so on. So he tended to play down the Tantra. At the same time, he couldn't, of course, ignore it completely. After all, he had practiced it himself in his youth. Not only that, at that time it was believed that the Tantras were Buddha Vachana, that is to say, they were the word of the Buddha, part of the word of the Buddha. It was believed, traditionally, that they'd been taught by the Buddha himself, though not necessarily in his ordinary human form. So Atisha, in a sense, was in rather a quandary. He couldn't really accept the Tantras wholeheartedly. At the same time, he couldn't reject them. So it seems he simply played them down. Today, of course, we're in a rather different position. We know that the Tantras were not literally taught by the Buddha, Shakyamuni, the historical Buddha. We know that they came into existence many hundreds of years later. We also know that they contain, some of them at least, many non-Buddhist features or elements. So we're free to reject whatever in them is not in accordance with the fundamental principles of Buddhism. Some Tibetan commentators maintain that Atisha played down the Tantras as a result of the influence of Dom Tonpa, his chief Tibetan disciple. As a Tibetan, Dom Tonpa was no doubt well aware of the damage that had been done to the Dharma in Tibet as a result of wrong tantric teaching. So this brings us to Dom Tonpa himself. In a way, it's a remarkable fact that though Dom Tonpa was Atisha's chief disciple, and though he subsequently became the founder of the Kadampa school based on Atisha's teaching, he wasn't a monk. He never became a monk. He remained a layman, but very highly respected and a man of deep spiritual realization. He seems to have met Atisha just as Atisha was about to leave Nari, or perhaps had just left Nari, for India, having spent 3 years in the Nari region of Tibet. And Dom Tonpa persuaded Atisha to visit central Tibet. And in any case, the road back to India was blocked at the time, as there was a war going on. Atisha therefore spent 10 years in central Tibet, that is to say, in the Lhasa area. Atisha also visited the famous monastery of Samye, the oldest monastery in Tibet, which had been founded in the 8th century by Shantarakshita and Padmasambhava. And here, in this great ancient old monastery, Atisha found copies of Sanskrit Buddhist texts that were no longer available in India itself. This was further evidence of the extent to which Buddhism had already declined in the land of his birth. Wherever he went, a teacher gave teachings, he composed books, he translated texts from Sanskrit into Tibetan with the help of his interpreters. And in his personal teaching, he placed particular emphasis on going for refuge to the three jewels, and is therefore often known as the Refuge Lama, because he emphasized that supremely important act of the Buddhist life to so great an extent. He also emphasized and encouraged the practice of the 10 precepts and the development of the bodhicitta, including, of course, the practice and development of metta and karuna as the basis of the development of the bodhicitta. In addition to these practices, he encouraged the worship, in particular, of four holy persons, four Arya Bhutkaras. And these were Shakyamuni, the Buddha himself, Avalokiteshvara, Tara, and Achala. Achala means the immovable one. He's an aspect of Varochana, the Buddha of the center of the mandala, in wrathful bodhisattva form. He's very popular, incidentally, in Japanese Buddhism, where he's known as Fudo. He's represented as a wrathful, very muscular, almost angry figure, carrying a noose or a lasso and a sword, and attended by two small acolytes. Atisha spent his last days in Nethang, south of Lhasa, and he died there in 1054, aged 73. And it's said that his tomb can still be seen there, or at least it could be seen there until recently. And before his passing away, Atisha appointed Dom Tompa, as his successor. From existing sources, we get a very definite impression of Atisha's character. He wasn't just a great scholar. He was a man of great spiritual attainments. It's clear that he was very modest, very unpretentious. It's clear that he had a sort of charismatic personality, as we sometimes say nowadays, but the charisma, I get the impression, was of a mild and gentle, persuasive kind. And it seems, from all accounts, that he was exceptionally kind and compassionate. He had a great love of animals, even, it seems. He was very courteous, very mild, gentle in speech and in behaviour. But above all, perhaps, Atisha was characterised by a tremendous spirit of self-sacrifice. He indeed gave a life for the Dharma.